Hey, listeners. I'm Karen Riley Jeffers, NCSM's Eastern 2 Director. Welcome to our series, Learning with Leaders, Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. Thank you for joining me and my co-host, Abel Maestas, the host of Teaching That Counts, as we talk with both leaders and influencers about their math journeys and contributions. Today, we will hear from our special guests about their inspiration, perceptions, and insights regarding instructional decisions that make the mathematics space welcoming and engaging to all. Listen and learn about how beliefs, practices, and policies must continue to advance to ensure that each and every person feels a sense of belonging in mathematics.
Well, welcome everybody. This month's podcast, NCSM Learning with Leaders. And in our series, Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. As always, for the last, this is almost a year now.
It is.
I am Abel Maestas and
Karen Riley Jeffers.
And we welcome you all to our podcast. And we're going to celebrate here our 1 year anniversary here soon. As a podcast host, actually, I think when this podcast drops, it will be our 1 year as hosts. So it's so cool to finish up our first year as co-hosts with a wonderful guest that we have today. So I'm looking forward to our discussion. And we actually had an opportunity to have this guest on my podcast, Teaching That Counts. So it's just really great to have him here with us at NCSM and be able to spread out that message as well. So would like to welcome Kai Carew to the podcast. Welcome, Kai.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure to be here with the two of you.
So just a little bit about Kai. Kai is a senior director of product and content for Mind Education. Leads a team of learning and game designers, artists, and mathematicians developing the next generation of ST Math's interactive programs. Kai has been designing neuroscience-driven edtech solutions for over a decade. Prior to joining Mind, he founded Beyond Math, an education company focused on teaching math in unique and non-traditional ways. Kai has spoken at SXSW-EDU and written articles published in Huffington Post. He's a bachelor's in engineering from the University of California, Berkeley, and is in my neck of the woods in California. So it's really cool to have him here and talk about all of these really cool things and how they connect to belonging. So once again, welcome to our podcast, Kai. And it's just awesome to have you here.
Yeah, thrilled to be here. And a fun fact about me is I'm a SoCal, live in SoCal, and love to surfing aficionado. And it's nice to being a mountain.
Be a Californian.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you again so much for being with us today. Even though Abel just introduced you, could you take a moment to share some of your journey in education that has led you to your current work?
Yeah, sure. So just a little bit about my background. I grew up, I love math. I was like one of those kids that just sat around and played those puzzle games and logic puzzles for hours, right? Like math also came very naturally for me. And I found it so fascinating how bored I was in math class, but how engaged I was in all of these puzzle activities. And so at some point during my journey, I made it my mission to, I got to change this experience for people. I started my own business, as you shared, out of college. And one of my experiences was teaching in really non-traditional ways. I used after school programs. I did a number of things, but teaching through after school, I was able to explore a lot of different non-traditional ways of teaching. And I got my math classes to get so exciting for like second and third graders that I had kids do my class on math, my after school math class for their birthday party. I was hired to actually.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
The second grader's birthday, my puzzle, you know, patterns math class. And that's when I knew, I was like, there's really something to this. And with my engineering background, I looked at, well, how do you scale? Because, you know, technology is a beautiful vehicle for scaling work. And that's kind of what led me to working at Mind Education, where we combine technology and the way the brain learns to transform how we teach math.
That is super cool. Like, You would think the big air jump houses, but you got puzzles, math puzzles. That's got to be so exciting for kids in thinking about just those non-traditional ways and getting them so excited about mathematics that they want you to come to do the stuff for your birth. Like you're the mathemagician. That's what you call it, mathemagician.
I love it.
So as you know, our series is titled Everyone Belongs in Mathematics. So our first question for all of our guests is, what does it mean to belong in mathematics?
I love that. I mean, when I think of belonging in math class, so two things jump out immediately to mind, right? I mean, seeing yourself, right? Believing that you are a mathematical thinker, one that thinks mathematically and can solve math problems. And the second thing that jumps out immediately is, you know, culturally relevant instruction or pedagogy, right? And using vehicles of really allowing students to see themselves in the curriculum materials in the classroom as vehicles to really deepen that belonging. One thing that I think permeates, so maybe a non-traditional thought on this that I think goes even deeper, is that in order for students to be engaged in math, they have to experience success in math. And I really feel like when we talk about the topic of belonging, if we're not talking about actually experiencing success and making that experience, it's kind of like experience success is like belonging in action. When I'm successful in an area, I am experiencing belonging in action with whatever I'm doing. And that has to, with everything else we're doing, that has to be fundamental to the experience, because if you're not experiencing success in what you're doing, you're not going to feel like you belong in that medium. So I could talk on and on about that, but I'll leave you with that bullet there on belonging.
I think we could go deeper in that. What do you think, Karen?
Yeah, because that brings up a question about, so the success part, but a lot of mathematics sometimes is not success. And then we have sometimes when we don't get the answers right and so forth. And so how does that correlate or tie in or integrate with what you just shared? So how do we reconcile the two?
Yeah, it's a great question. So when I say experience success, it doesn't mean you also don't experience failure, productive struggle, all of the above, right? But I think, and this goes back to my experiences when I was teaching and having non-traditional ways of engaging students, I wanted to create environments where even if they had really, really challenging puzzles that they're solving, they also had other problems that they were able to solve, right? And so part of it is, I mean, this is kind of a cliche term at this point, but it's the low floor. It's providing, and it's also how you present the problems, right? So providing problems in a way that can provide access to actually really rich mathematics to all students. I mean, that's part of the key to create success. And then you're able to meet students with where they're at and give them problems they have access to and can be successful. And then you can level up from that experience. And so, like, for example, my daughter, I told you I'm a surfer. My daughter, it's a big goal of mine to get her out surfing because it's an amazing activity to do. And I want to be able to do that with her. She experiences a lot of falling on her face in the water. But if I don't pare it down to make sure she has some really successful and enjoyable rides and experiences as a foundation of her experience, she's just never going to want to go surfing because it's too hard and she can't be successful at it and she always falls at it and she can't ever feel like she's, you know, achieving and able to do it. And I think it's the similar thing that we need to do with mathematics with all of our kiddos.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Because it does, it's those little small wins, right? Those small wins that allow the keep going aspect. And so I see that tying in a lot with like video games and gaming, and that's kind of what brings kids, like there could be a really, really difficult game, but the small little wins and the keep going and those little things keep them engaged into wanting to like come back for more. So what are those things that we could be doing to help students connect those things, those small wins, to keep them wanting more, to want more success and want to feel like they belong in that group.
Yeah. So, I mean, this comes back to puzzles and I think the overlap between puzzles and math. And one thing that is key to achieving this from my perspective is presenting problems visually, right? So visuals provide access for all students, especially students that struggle with language and often can actually have language be a barrier to their access of mathematics. And so providing even simple visual problems and puzzles that kids can engage in and experience success with, you know, you think about, I like to study a lot of games to learn how they create engagement because games are phenomenal at engaging our students, right? And all they do is they present these simple little scenarios like jump over the hole. Yay, you jumped over the hole. Amazing job. Now jump on top of the box. Yay, you jumped on top of the box. Amazing job. And so what they do is they present these little purely visual scenarios to students, and then they celebrate the students in their success. And I mean, this is obviously a challenge when we have, you know, grade-based curriculums and we're moving the entire class, you know, in a linear sequence, right? Is how do you create these experiences as part of it where students can always, you know, have those experiences? And I think making, even if you're experiencing your core curriculum and core lessons, using visual problems, right? And also creating the low floor to entry, that low floor to high ceiling, that makes the problems accessible where students can start to engage. And then that's going to start to create a sense of belonging.
Mm-hmm. My mind is going in a couple of directions. As in many schools, we have these standardized assessments that have no visuals. And so what it made me think about is that as students are understanding problems, as they're presented with visuals, they could also be prompted to create their own visuals as a bridge. You know, like I'm experiencing these visuals, but sometimes I'm not going to have visuals because when they take their state assessments, they're not going to see any visuals. And so having that balance of the two where they can apply even that to support them in understanding the problems that they'll be faced in these whole situations. So I'm going to shift gears just a little bit. You do a lot of work around academic discourse and student discussion. So why are these like so important for students to learn math and help them feel like they belong in the math class?
Yeah. So I think a lot of this is spurred on why are we even teaching math in the first place, right? And traditionally, the reason we taught math was, why did we traditionally teach math 50, 100 years ago?
To work in a factory. that's right. To know your times tables and to compute things.
To calculate, right?
Yeah,
to calculate. Literally, there were professions where you were a professional calculator. And that's the role that math served. You needed people to be able to do calculations. Clearly, I mean, for decades, we've had tools that enable us to do that. So the question is, why are we even teaching math? What is the purpose of math class? And if you look at the 21st century framework, two of the four 21st century skills are communication and collaboration. And if you think about what is the number one skill that students need in the professional world, I would frame that as collaborative problem solving, right? We are solving problems. Anything you get paid to do, you're solving problems. And the larger the problem, the more collaborative the fashion it tends to be. And so math class happens to be like one of the best places in a student's growing up that they can learn collaborative problem solving skills. Yet historically, you know, looking at the silent classrooms where kids are just drill and kill, is a complete opposite of that. So, right, turning classrooms into a place where we're preparing students for 21st century skills is you need them talking, you need them discussing, you need them explaining their ideas, you need them hearing the ideas of others. And you obviously need to have independent work time as well, but it's taking that independent time and then bridging it together. And funny enough, there's actually areas of your brain that aren't going to fire if you aren't engaged in some form of discourse. And so it also resembles, if you want to engage students in whole brain learning, you want to have discourse as a component of your teaching.
That's super interesting. So can you dig into that a little bit about some of the, because I know you've been doing some work, at least in mind, they deal with a lot of neuroscience to bring that neuroscience, neuroscience research into practice. So how can we be using some of the things that we've been able to get in the last decade on neuroscience to help bring it to kids and bring mathematics engagement increased in our classrooms?
Yeah. Well, the first one goes back to something I talked about before. We're really big on spatial temporal models, right? Spatial temporal thinking is foundational to how the brain learns. And when you present scenarios or present concepts in spatial temporal ways, it allows you to access that concept using your visual cortex, right? You can see it. You don't need to have it explained to you. So rather than trying to comprehend the understanding through the language, you can see it and experience it directly. And we all know this from using manipulatives in math class, right? Is a key way to build conceptual understanding, whether it's of place value ideas or multiplication or fractions or whatever you want to build. Then building off that, right? So once you have that kind of conceptual foundation, I mean, there are areas in your brain, specifically the Wernicke's and Broca's areas, that will get triggered for anything to do with language processing, right? So when you start engaging language is when you're actually tying, and this is what, when you spoke earlier, Karen, about how do we connect this to assessments, because kids are assessed on assessments that are very language heavy. Well, the key is you don't start with the language, right? You start with the core concepts where you can use the visuals, but then you bridge the language on top of that, starting by having students explain things in their own words, trying to make sense and reason of what they're seeing. Then, I mean, this gets into, I love using language and then having to actually model visually. I mean, this is like the holy grail of mathematics is mathematical modeling. And that's essentially taking a situational problem and then having to represent that typically in some type of visual diagram and then eventually, an equation and expressions. And so I think that's the way we bring in the neuroscience, like start with the spatial temporal, the visual as a foundation, and then bridge on the language as a way to not only engage the whole brain, deepen the understanding, and prepare students for the standardized assessments that they'll be assessed on.
What you mentioned about having students explain it in their own language and in their own words reminds me of a previous podcast with Marta Garcia and work that she did. And it ties to work that Bob Moses did that appears in the screening Counted Out, where that's exactly what they did and had the students like take these situations. They explained it in their own language first to demonstrate their understanding and connected it back to the mathematics that was involved.
Yeah, there you go.
Go ahead, Karen.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to kind of bring it back to the games. I know that you talked about how games really keep kids involved and puzzles. And so I know that you guys do a lot of work around EdTech and bringing EdTech to the classroom. So what might be some of the tools that we could be using to help bring that sense of belonging? I know a lot of kids that they have this community online. They have a community within like Discord or games. And we have in some of our schools, esports. And so that I feel is a community that I think students feel like they belong. We found, this is just, I guess, a side note, but I don't want to talk too long, but we found that a lot of students that were in esports had never been in any other extracurricular activity.
Interesting.
Yeah, I found that very interesting. They weren't in band, they weren't in sports, they weren't in anything until they got into esports. So it's a place where we're bringing kids to feel like they belong in school in esports. So I'm wondering how we can get some of those ed tech tools to help make kids help kids feel like they have a sense of belonging within our math classes.
Right. Yeah. And it's, I think, you know, speaking to the esports aspect, I think part of what you're doing is taking students who didn't feel like a sense of belonging in a community they could be part of. And now that's a community that they can actually feel belonging in, because typically they're at home engaged by themselves on their computer. And now you're creating a community around, you know, their love and their passion. I really like to look at it as like, what are the principles? So I think the gamification movement came and went, right? Like just putting, you know, leaderboards and giving kids coins to do things, like, you're not going to transform education. Okay. We call that chocolate covered broccoli in the game-based learning world, right? It's, you're not fundamentally changing the experience. So if you're just thinking game mechanics, that's not the idea. The idea is, how do I look at the underlying principles that are, you know, games are doing to actually, and this is all games, right? Not just video games, but card games or board games or all of that, to actually engage students. And so part of the principles, right, and this is when you talked about tools, I could share a few, is you're creating this world, right, where kids find the world meaningful. Okay, I'm going to use the word meaningful. And it's really interesting. I feel like in education and math education in particular, there's such this emphasis on like, well, we got to get to real world problems, right? That's what we have to prepare students for. But it's, you know, part of what makes games so engaging, it's not that they're real world, even though they might have real world components, it's that they're really meaningful, right? They mean something to the students. They're not just some random, you know, language that we're using to try to connect it to something that we think kids are going to relate to. You inherently make it meaningful by the context itself. It actually makes sense. And so part of what we do to do this is, you know, we'll create these little puzzle games, these little puzzle scenarios. And what you're doing is you're creating a meaningful context where everything makes sense within this. It's actually a fake world, but it's a meaningful fake world. And it's meaningful to our students. And we not only have students, you know, play these independently, but this is where we'll have students engage in conversations, right? So we'll do something we call a puzzle talk, which is where you can take one of these little puzzles and have students engage in a discussion around this puzzle, and you can click on the buttons and you can see what happens and kids can talk about it. We have a whole free puzzle talk resources that are available online, free to use for anyone across the country. And this is one of the ways that we bridge you know, the principles that make something like a video game or a puzzle or a board game so engaging, is we create these little mini worlds that kids get to have conversations around and get to talk about and get to see what happens when they interact with it. And it's really exciting to see kids just get so excited about this little penguin character trying to cross a screen.
Yeah, my kids just love, I don't know, something about games. I mean, I guess I do know. I'm a Gen Xer. I grew up with Nintendo. I get it. Even though my teenagers don't think I ever get it.
Yeah. I know. I remember trying to beat Tetris and Mario and all the things as well. One of the things, like every time you say something, it makes me think about something else. I make a connection to either something I heard or something that was discussed previously. But, you know, this whole idea is just making it meaningful. And creating these situations that have meaning and purpose for the students so that they can be engaged. This reminds me of just also connecting to their lived experiences, because if they've lived it, they've seen it, they've experienced it, it means something personal to them. And they have that meaning and that engagement, and they can bring their perspective to it as well. And as they're interacting in these low floor activities, they're having these personal experiences with it that's, you know, creating meaning and so forth for them, and, you know, building some of that internal confidence at the same time, so that when they do have those moments where it's challenging, it's like, oh, wait a minute. They fall back on what they could do, and then they still do it. And then if you're just competitive, like so many of us are, and it's like, no, I want to finish this. I want to do it. I want to get the answer. Then they're really invested in it. It also reminds me of like a classroom I went into one time where they were debating something really simple. And from one perspective, one person might say, oh my goodness, these children are rambunctious, they're loud, they're this, they're that. But when I spoke to the teacher afterwards, I said, your children are really passionate about that concept that you were talking about, because they were fiercely like challenging each other on what was correct and what wasn't. So like having those opportunities in classrooms would be amazing for our students to experience on a greater basis.
You know, echoing on that, a few months ago, so one of the things that we were doing is experimenting with different lessons, and we were in a classroom, and it was so fascinating. We took a problem that would be like a traditional algebra problem, right, that kids are really engaged in, right, just all of these symbols on the screen, right? I mean, it's the thing that makes the heads drop. And then what we did is we just replaced these, you know, X's. We used some little characters, right, some little critters from our puzzle world. So we had these just apples, and then we had this little character we call a pie monster. And just by replacing the X's and Y's with apples and pie monsters, and by spacing it out so they could see it on the screen, the level of engagement went from virtually nothing and no discussion to the entire class was arguing about, oh, well, was the answer 70 or 25? And then it got into a whole deep, you know, the core of it was an order of operations. And again, this came back from like, it's actually the same mathematics, but it's the way that you're presenting it to students. You're presenting it in a way that you're actually meeting them in their world that they feel related to and engaged with. And it just completely changes the experience.
So from a leadership perspective, what are some supports that educational leaders can provide teachers to help enhance engagement and discussion through technology in mathematics classes?
Ooh, that's a big question here. So I'll try to start broad and then go specific. I think broadly, like when it comes to also math discourse and belonging and bringing student voice, I mean, like math talks is by far the easiest way to start to create that culture, right? And there's so many different vehicles of math talks or math routines that you can use out there. There's some that use PowerPoint presentations. I mentioned we use a form we call Puzzle Talks, right? Which are interactive puzzles that are provided free. Those are like the easiest way to start to shift the culture in the classroom. You can start with just 5 minutes at a time, right? Even once or a few times a week. And then slowly you can grow the culture in your classroom so that you realize math students should be talking. Other tools, I mean, obviously I am favorable towards, you know, leveraging puzzle-like games and activities that can present problems in really non-language-based ways, like purely visual ways, as a really powerful tool. So there's apps that do that. And what else? I'm also a big fan of right now. I'm always looking at how you can leverage technology to make the teacher's job easier. I mean, this is what technology should do in our lives, right? And it's how do we take all of these things that teachers do and actually create technology to actually both make their job easier and make the learning deeper, right? So you got to do both of them, because sometimes you make their job easier, but actually the learning becomes more shallow of an experience. And so another thing is, you know, there's different organizations that have different lesson platforms that allow students to kind of show their work, show their thinking. You can easily project it on the overhead projector, have kids start talking about other student work. And so that's also another phenomenal vehicle to kind of create a, you know, discourse-based classroom that leverages technology and like lowers the lift on the teacher to create that.
Yeah, thank you. I know we used something called, in our school district, we have these ViewSonics, these really big screens. And there's this little app called the Throw app. And so what you do is you just take a picture of student work. And I like to do stuff on vertical whiteboards. And so we just take a picture of student work, and then we just like not literally throw, because you're not gonna throw your phone, but I almost used the word literally symbolically. You just kind of swipe. There's this little swipe feature, and you're basically swiping the picture onto the ViewSonic, and it puts it up there, and you could put three pieces or how many pieces of student work, and then you can ask students, like, what do you see that's different or similar in these student work pieces? And you can have that discussion in class. It's a really cool tool.
Exactly. Yeah.
And wouldn't have been able to do that years ago.
What do you think is different and similar? I found is like the easiest way to start getting kids talking about something. I mean, it's so easy, but there's like a game aspect to it, right? It's a game. Find what's similar and find what's different.
Yeah. It's kind of like the easiest way to get into deep learning is by just what's similar and what's different, right?
Yeah.
All right. So we've had such a wonderful discussion. Thank you. It went by so fast. It did. And so we're coming to a close here. And we want to make sure that we ask you the same questions we have asked everyone on our podcast. We started out with what is a sense of belonging. And so we end up here at one tip for leaders to support a sense of belonging in mathematics that's connected to the work that you do.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you gotta let kids experience success in math class. Like, I love culturally relevant pedagogy. We have a whole cast of characters we've created as ways of students being able to see themselves in math class and in their work. But at the foundation, we have to give kids experiences that they can be successful at. And I'm a big fan of visuals are such a powerful way to do that. When you can make it puzzle-based, they're gonna wanna engage. If that can be integrated in the core lessons, even better. But it's once kids experience the success, that's what creates, then they feel like they belong. And if I can't experience success, I don't care how many other things you do, I'm not going to feel like I belong if I can't feel successful in what I'm doing.
Thank you so much for all the tidbits that you shared today and all the connections that you made, helping us remember how powerful visuals are. Thank you. We learn so much every month. We say this at the end of every episode. Our listeners are really tired of us saying it, but we do every time. So thank you again for taking the time out to share your expertise with us. So if our listeners want to learn a little bit more about your work, how could they do so?
Sure. So they can go to mindeducation.org. They'll learn about our organization, our programs. There you can find the free Puzzle Talk resources that are available for anyone across the country to use tomorrow. You just put in your name and email and you'll get access to a repository of Puzzle Talks from early learning all the way through grade 8. And
All right. Puzzle Talks, something to add to my math talks, number talks, and data talks. So we're going to add Puzzle Talks. So thank you once again, Kai, for joining us on our podcast. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We appreciate it. And those of you that have listened to us for the last year, I don't want to speak for Karen, but I appreciate everyone listening to the podcast and making it as successful. And I feel like I belong because I've seen success. So. Yeah. So thank you, listeners. Thank you, Kai, for joining us. And we hope you listeners out there will return next month when our podcast will be a live recording from NCSM conference. So that'll be a great one. And I believe we have some great guests for that one, too. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we'll catch you all next time.
We hope that you have been inspired by this bold mathematics leadership conversation and will tune in to our podcast series each month. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. You can learn more about NCSM leadership and mathematics education and our upcoming professional learning events on the NCSM website, mathedleadership.com. You can also follow NCSM on the X at MathEdLeaders and using the hashtag NCSMBold. Until next time.